and then dress it up in a bunch of mythology and poor logic and too many contradictions, and then sell it. I mean, what he needs to do is present a clean version of plasma physics without all that crap and BS, without all of the Kantian nonsense, the Kantian nonsense that quantum physics is dressed in, and just present it pure form. We don't need his analysis of what he thinks, you know, this stuff is based on, and you know, how it comes out of religion or whatever. You know, he can't know that. And to me, his arguments are not solid. You know, when I consider my history in studying religions and symbolism and mythology and psychedelics.
What are you referring to? I don't understand with your take on David Bohm. You're talking about the implicit order? Are you talking... what did you look at?
Or maybe we're confusing people. Maybe I'm confusing Talbot or something like that. One of these guys for...
That's Talbot.
Okay, Talbot. That's who I'm talking about. The one who mixes in all of his mythology stuff with his plasma physics. And
I think you'd probably really appreciate David Bohm's work. Thought as a System.
I think he's probably... Sorry, is David Bohm saying that quantum physics is valid or bullshit?
He has a different take on quantum physics than a lot of people generally do, and it's a take I appreciate. So it's a lot to get into here, but I'd recommend Wholeness and the Implicit Order.
Yeah, there was a holographic universe or something like that.
Yeah, he was a contributor to the holographic universe, but he was my favorite contributor.
You know, this is where, again, this is where David Harriman's work comes in and gets really interesting. I haven't studied Bohm, but I would recommend looking at plasma physics as well as David Harriman's work, because it looks like, most of quantum physics is just magic in a box.
Yeah. I feel a lot of quantum physics is beating around a certain... they avoid...
The whole thing is designed to get people not to find truth, to not believe in themselves, to think that any sort of truth is objective, and... then they just blended it into the New Age cults and religions, and then now it's... unquestionable, like your Jesus faith.
Right.
So I was listening last night to your interview with Fraterex. I'm fairly good friends with him, and I was listening to your interview last night. And you talk about this idea of a second catch web of the New Age. And here we are, less than, 10 days away from this 2012 quote-unquote end date. Can you speak to that a little bit of what do you think the point of this catch web is, and what is, and in an immediate sense, what do you think is the purpose of having this end now, of putting some importance on this moment in time?
The catch web is to keep people ensnared so that they're easily controlled, so that if they break out of the major religions like Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Islam, that there's this whole other system there to get them ensnared so that they don't break free and don't see the whole damn system. What was your other question?
What do you think is the point of that catch web putting an immediacy on this moment in time of pointing out December 2012?
If you go back, if you study the history of the whole 2012 meme, I mean, they just needed a date, and they picked one. If you do searches for Zionist rabbis and stuff, they predicted that this will be the time when the Jews finally get control of the New World Order. And if you look at other groups, you know,
So I guess my question is,
Hold on. If you have a, let's say you're a project engineer, a project manager, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And you've got a project that you've got to roll out. Do you just go out and you tell your crew, hey, we've got this project? Or do you tell your crew, hey, we've got this project and here's a deadline?
Sure, yeah, okay, I get that. Okay, question is, do you see something that, do you think they're going to meet a deadline in any, using that sense?
Well, what do you think I'm fighting against? I mean, see, here's the thing. If they don't meet the deadline, they would never come out and admit it. It would just be pushed back because too many people woke up. And so they couldn't implement it at that time. It's all about tiptoe totalitarianism. And so, you know, it's this slow progression. And if they can't do it now, then they'll step back. But if you go back to 1976, the In Search Of TV show with Leonard Nimoy's season 2, episode 4, I believe. It's his Maya episode. And right in the last closing minutes, he says that the whole thing is going to be used to bring in a world government. Of course, a new world order, which, of course, goes back to, you know, the Zionist issue that we were discussing earlier. So, I mean, there is a loop and, an agenda there that they're definitely trying to use. And it's just a method of getting a whole lot of people caught up onto a new age bandwagon that even I got. You know, I was always a little doubtful of it, but in my early 20s, I bought into his 2012 for a little bit. And my former co-author, Andrew, he had 2012 stuff all over our book, which when I bought him out in 2008 or so, I went through and I removed all of his stuff about 2012 out of the book. Because at that time, I had done so much, you know, by then, I had just done so much research in the field, I realized it was all BS. And so, you know, it's just, you have to have, you know, cults. there's a comedic film, How to Run a Cult, or something like that, that I've posted on my Facebook page that's really good. I suggest people check that out, because it really lays out the basics of the 2012 movement. And not only that, but the 2012 meme was started by Professor Michael Coe out of Yale. Michael Coe was a CIA agent. He passed it on to either Theodosius Dobzhansky, who is a eugenicist, who worked with Julian Huxley, who was a eugenicist, who was Aldous Huxley's brother, who worked at Esalen. Or he was also friends with Gordon Wasson, who I've exposed to CIA. Gordon Wasson Gordon Wasson and Alan Coe, or Michael Coe, were friends, as is revealed in the Sacred Mushroom Seeker book. There's a chapter on Wasson by Coe in that book. And so it could have gone through, through Wasson or through Theodosius Dobzhansky, either Julian or Huxley, and then Aldous Huxley. And then it goes
that.
Out.
I always heard Jose Arguelles.
Well, that's a later point.
Really?
So after the CIA agent creates it, it gets, you know, and then even William Burroughs mentions it about being a control system in 1965 and how it tells everybody how to feel on every day of the week. And so this is in an article in a French magazine that I've got listed up on my website. And then Michael Coe publishes his stuff in 66. Like I said, it goes through, as far as I can tell, one of these two channels, Wasson or Dobzhansky. It gets into Esalen, and then McKenna picks it up. You know, they create a name for it. And even before then, there was this guy, this Jesuit priest, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who created the Omega Point theory, which McKenna based his theory off of. And even David de Rothschild cites this guy, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, about all of this stuff and about, the fourth world mind control stuff and how they mind control all the masses. So anyway, there are these a handful of channels. It gets over to the Esalen Institute. From there, both Jose Arguelles and Terrence McKenna are working there. It gets dispensated out to the public. Then later on, Ian Lungold, Laura Eisenhower, Daniel Pinchbeck, and Carl Coleman, et cetera, pick it up and spread the lie from there.
Awesome. I want to go through all those, everything you just said. As the first place I can trace it back to is Arguelles. To go beyond that is very helpful.
I've got an article up on my website, in fact, but and it's all if you look under the Secret History of Magic Mushrooms page, or just how Darwin, Huxley, said, and Esalen started the 2012 movement and began one of the largest mind control operations in history. And then in there, I lay out the ties between Darwin and Sir Thomas Henry Huxley worked together, and this is why all of the stuff is being run by them and is all based on eugenics. Is, you know, it's a continuation of Darwinian and Huxley and eugenics. Huxley was Darwin's bulldog. And so they created this BS club called the X Club, which is based on Ezekiel 9:6, slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom has the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men who were before the house. And so then they just go out and they you know, the idea is to slaughter everyone. So they're using Darwin's theory, which was based off of Kant and Wallace, et cetera, going back to Immanuel Kant and all of this irrationality as their justification for social Darwinism. And then it goes from Darwinism into neo-Darwinism and Mendelism, and then it gets into the Julian Huxley's modern synthesis, and then now it's the extended synthesis, and then each one refuted the last. But then you have all of these people trying to pretend that it wasn't refuted at every step of the way, like the newest extended synthesis by Pigliucci and Mayer is, you know, they show in the first several chapters of their book how Darwin's theories are debunked, all the while arguing that his theories aren't debunked. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but William Burroughs, going back to the Maya thing, 1965, he says, I've been interested in the Maya system, which was a control calendar. You see, their calendar postulated really how everyone should feel at a given time, with lucky days, unlucky days, etc. And then I already mentioned Leonard Nimoy. He says, and of course, originally Jose Arguelles and Carl Coleman, they, you know, Terence and Jose didn't settle on the December 21st, 2012 date until the 80s sometime. Like, if you look in early, which was an Invisible Landscape or Archaic Revival, whichever, if you look in the first edition of that, there's nothing there about any 2012 date. And then you go back to, like, the 91 or 92 version, and suddenly it's just popped right in the into the
page. Interesting.
Yeah, so then, you know, so Leonard Nimoy says, the ancient Mayans, men of knowledge, conceived their time on Earth, their cycle of civilization to be 5,200 years. Beginning their calendar, August 12, 3113 BC, they predicted that on December 24, 2011, and this was, of course, you know, 30-some years ago they put this out, a cataclysmic earthquake would terminate their cycle of civilization. New men of knowledge would then appear to fight the forces of evil. I mean, this sounds like the...
Are you talking about the cartoon of Star Trek?
No. We're talking about Leonard Nimoy in Search of TV show.
Oh, okay. Because, you know, there's the Mayan cartoon one with Lucifer.
No, in Search of TV show with Leonard Nimoy.
Okay, go for it.
New men of knowledge would then appear to fight the forces of evil and lead the people to create a world government. If the Mayan men of knowledge were right, and of course there's nothing in Mayan texts or Mayan stones or anything that suggests this. This is something that the Western culture made up, that Michael Coe made up, and then we exported it back into Mayan culture.
Sure.
If the Mayan men of knowledge were right, in just 34 years, we may learn the answers to some of the ancient Mayan mysteries. And that, like I said, that's season 2, episode 4. And so, you know, we can trace this stuff all the way back, but, you know, Professor Michael Coe, it's his 1966 book on the Maya, which is the first academic publication of anything of it. Like I said, he was a CIA agent, and then William Burroughs just before him. So he and William Burroughs first mentioned it, but it's clear that the elites were already studying it because they realized that... you know, this being an ancient priest calendar, that this was how the ancient Mayans controlled their masses. So they saw it as a good opportunity to slip it into our culture to get all the dum-dums to believe it, right? And so you get Terence McKenna to package it up, to dress it up, and this and that and whatnot, and then they resell it back out into society as something that it never was. I've got a...
So, yeah, and at one time you did believe...
What?
Is that fair to say at one time you did buy into it, or you were
At one time, I hadn't done all of my grammar on it.
Okay, but isn't it a tool to kind of cut your teeth with your grammar? Because it comes into your mind, and it's so romantic, and it seems to explain everything. But if you then employ your grammar, the dismantling of the 2012 meme is sort of like your graduation.
It goes back to, tricking people to put their logic before their grammar, and you're selling these grandiose ideas. See, what you have to remember is that anyone who makes a claim, the onus of proof always falls on them. And they have to substantiate those claims beyond any doubt, And then you don't attack them when they question you for not substantiating your ideas, for not taking the onus of proof. Of course, Terence McKenna and Pierre Teilhard de Chardin and all of these guys, they bear the onus of proof. And until they do so, it's garbage and it shouldn't be believed whatsoever. I mean, yesterday was 12-12-12, and there was a bunch of doomsday predictions for that as well, And then last year, Carl Coleman's doomsday prediction. And then there was the 2000 computer bug that was supposed to be the end of the world. And, so every generation comes up with their own. It typically, the doomsday is within their own lifetime, etc.
But I kind of consider it as like a Rubik's Cube that these guys scrambled up and then they put out there for students to return back to its original state. That it's a mental exercise. It might arrive and seem like it's something real, but the more time you spend with it...
I think that's being very generous to the CIA and people who manipulate and control others, because you know what? Using sophism and trickery and lies and things like that as opposed to genuine upliftment, if you want to worship Demosthenes and 322 and Skull and Bones, all the power to you, but I'm not down with that. I mean, that's where we would have to make a break.
What do you think of the fact that Terence McKenna very often in his talks would say that it was a very important thing to question what was coming out about culture, not trusting what was on your TV, not trusting
Oh, that's the culture that has been created, though. That's not your real culture. Unfortunately, Terence McKenna sold feminism and destroying the nuclear family, which is the backbone of our society. He sold transhumanism and humanism, both, I should say secular humanism, both of which Julian Huxley came up with. Julian Huxley headed the British Eugenics Society, founded UNESCO, founded the World Wildlife Fund.
I get all that. My question is, do you think that him putting in there, do you think that's to be disregarded, or do you think that's a way of saying, this is what I think. I think that there's no need for a tight-knit nuclear family, but
I think Terence McKenna, the more I go back and look at the Fourth World Agenda and what the Huxleys were selling and then review what Terence was selling, I mean, he is full-on selling their agenda, the destruction of the family, the destruction of the middle class. I mean, he creates the archaic revival, for fuck's sake. I mean, what is that other than the return of the Dark Age?
Well, there's two ways you can look at that, I think.
I know, and I've reviewed it a lot, and did you guys see my video that I just put out with Atwill this week?
I listened to that interview. I didn't see the video, but I listened to the 90% of it.
The whole psychedelic movement is all about pushing this return to, a pre-technological state, and who does that benefit? K. Bono.
I'd like to see my nieces and nephews not run around with a TV in front of them every day. I'd like to have an archaic revival for them.
Okay, so what does them doing that and acting irrational have to do with bringing back a dark age? Wouldn't it be better just to teach them rationality and critical thinking?
I never got that from him. What I got was that he was suggesting that there was something... a way that we related to our environment at one point that could be integrated into our current world. Like, not to say that all to erase everything that's happened, like as if that would be possible anyway, but to take an aspect of it that may have had some value.
You know, the whole movement, even you can go back to Timothy Leary's boat party with Alan Watts and Allen Ginsberg and Gary Schneider, and they're promoting this, everybody leaving the cities and returning to teepees crap. But I mean, you know, Terrence McKenna, he's selling humanism. Humanism is what I'm not talking about Renaissance humanism. I'm talking about the modern stuff that the elites use to control the masses. It's controlled opposition. You get a bunch of kids to believe in some movement or something, and it sounds grand and nice. Yeah, you know, carbon, it ruins the world. Never mind that all plants grow on carbon. Never mind if you ask any pot grower what happens if you put CO2 in a grow room, that all of a sudden the plants start growing 10 times faster and put out more oxygen, right?
Right.
I mean, the carbon, all of this type of stuff is just crap. But I mean, you know, Terrence says here, and here's, I just took the key points out. The mushroom said, but since you brought it up, I would be very interested in seeing a set of social policies, tax incentives, medical policies, insurance policies put in place to limit male birth. This is the way to feminize the human race. I am a feminist. As a humanist, I advocate a reduction in male birth. Never mind that he's a father and has a son. I mean, number one would be to kill himself. Number two would be to kill his son, neither of which he did. And then he wants to go talking about reducing male birth, all of this eugenics bullshit. I did an interview with Karen of Girl Rights What, who has, you know, she's this woman who's investigated the whole history of feminism. She's got like 50 or 100 videos out on YouTube exposing feminism for what it is. And so I got her on the show, and she totally lays out how the feminist movement is a huge lie. And so when you package that on top of what Terrence McKenna was selling, and then when you go into, I keep referencing the Fourth World, I have this brain database. And in the brain database, if you pull up this stuff, like the Fourth World or the Battle for the Collective Mind, you see feminism right there. You've got the Gaia Hypothesis is right in there. You know, all of these guys were working with the Esalen Group and with the MKUltra Group. You've got the destruction of the family, destruction of the middle class. You've got geoengineering or chemtrails. You've got GMO, genetically modified foods. Neo-shamanism, which is not shamanism. You know, if any of you guys have heard my interviews or my interview with Professor Neil Whitehead on dark shamanism, the entire Western push of this of these shamanic ideas is totally whitewashed, half of what shamanism is. And then you've got psychiatry in there, quantum physics and the sexual revolution, UFOs, all of those things fall under this Fourth World Battle for the Collective Mind. And then, of course, this stuff was primarily run by Edmund Leopold de Rothschild.
But so then we have, well, I guess there's two questions I want to ask you here. One is, so I understand your position, you're not looking to throw the baby out with the bathwater here. It's not like all this study of these topics, whether it be shamanism, psychedelics, different mystical systems, we don't completely dismiss these in your view, right? It's just saying also, these have been used, these have been perverted and misused?
Sure, exactly. But, you know, mysticism in itself, and again, referring back to that Peikoff talk, the history of philosophy, he goes into a lot of the problems with mysticism in that talk and how mysticism always ends up into tyranny and into, you know, religious renaissance and this you know, the inquisitions and this and that.
Sure, but science also leads to tyranny. I mean, you know, any of these things can be used.
How does science really lead to tyranny?
I don't know. I live in New York. I see cameras on every street corner and.
Okay, again, you seem to conflate irrationality with science.
Oh, no, I'm saying the ramifications of a mystical obsessed culture, okay. You're saying is religious devotion.
What is government?
Government is a control system.
Bigger than that, what is it?
thievery? What?
Government is the largest religion in town.
Sure. I'd agree with that. Yeah.
Government only allows the other religions to exist. That's why they all file corporate charters to be allowed to exist under the government. The government, all of these people put on Halloween costumes and hats and gowns and badges and billy clubs and this stuff, and then they buy this false appeal, this false ad veracunium fallacy, then they're allowed to go out and do all of this irrational behavior, put up cameras, do all of this stuff. That's not science. That is, again, going back to the irrational behavior, to people not thinking clearly, you know, to allowing government to exist in the first place, and then that goes on to spying on everybody and stealing their money and everything right. else.
So I think you and I are in agreement here to an extent, because ultimately I think what we're both seeing is that the real problem is not any of these systems. It's not technology. It's not mysticism. It's a lack of critical thinking on behalf of the people.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, it's the lack of critical thinking, but the mysticism, it's the replacement of critical thinking with mysticism, that is the problem. You know,
right,
I mean,
whereas the mysticism should be like should be infused from the get-go with critical thinking,
and even you have to be very careful then. I mean, it's like you can get into small face and vast face in the Kabbalah, and both do primarily and simultaneously exist, but at the same time, when you go the route of mysticism, then you immediately get into all sorts of irrationality, and you open yourself up to a whole world of tyranny and murder and bullshit. You know, because mysticism leads to Zionism, leads to New World Orders, leads to, you know, this and that, and Christians fighting that, and Christians doing this and the other thing and taking our rights away. I mean, it's just...
That's an extreme position. Mysticism leads to Zionism, leads to the
Again,
New World Order.
I've cited you several times to Leonard Peikoff's History of Philosophy. So, I mean, that may sound extreme, but again, refer back to that before you put your logic before your grammar.
No, but you're the one who stopped me when I said that technology and science can also... I was arguing that science can also be a religion, that we trust that all of these technological advancements are for our benefit and they can be misused. And ultimately, again, we're
That's
in agreement.
That's irrationality.
Science in its pure form
looks at all of the options.
Dude, we're arguing the same thing. I'm not debating you here. I'm saying, ultimately, yes, the problem is that we are allowing our irrational... our failure of logic to intercede,
we're allowing our irrationally to improperly direct our technology.
Right, and I would consider mysticism and psychedelics another technology.
I got snow here.
I said I would consider mysticism.
No, I was just mentioning the weather. I just started snowing. I was saying sorry.
I thought you meant fuzz.
I thought you meant cocaine.
Stop trying to give me a snow job, man. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I guess I'm saying I would consider these things also technology. So that's why I'm arguing the same thing: is if we have a proper logical system. Using your trivium as an example, if we have a logical system, if we put common sense and critical thinking first, then we are safe to explore these things, including technology, and again, I would consider psychedelics and mysticism another form of
technology.
I would
say psychedelics, but I would say that mysticism with rationality would kind of go by the wayside. You know what I mean?
Okay, that's your position. That's cool.
I think we would find a clearer understanding of it, and it would go away from mystery, mystifying, unknown to, you know, rational discovery and thought.
Yeah, I guess that's my issue with a lot of what I view as the religion of science, modern day religion of science, is that we assume that there are no more mysteries rather than trying to tackle them in a scientific manner.
That's not just science there. That has also to do with the Wundtian compartmentalization of the PhD system, etc.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, so this causes a lot of that. But, you know, a lot of professors do break out of that sort of compartmentalization and narrow-minded thinking.
I know a lot of mystics who break out of that system, too.
You know, one thing I really appreciate
I don't know any mystics who pick up critical thinking and remove all of the fallacies from their thoughts and remain mystics.
One thing I really appreciate about Joseph Atwill is after everything that he's gone into and all he's uncovered and everything, he still calls himself a Christian. I don't consider myself a Christian, but he said it in your interview. I've heard him say it in his book. He says it in Caesar's Messiah.
I'll have to ask him. I haven't talked to him since yesterday, but I'll ask him because he very much is very clear about Christianity being a control system, about Jesus never existing, and about the entire story being based off of Titus. So then, therefore, being that the idea of Christianity is bullshit mind control system, why would he call himself one?
Because he makes the distinction between gospel Christianity and his own relationship to the principles that are beyond the actual story that was pushed on everybody by the Flavian court.
Well, I'll have to talk to him about that. I haven't spoken to him in like 24 hours.
Okay.
You know, Joe and I talk just about every day, so...
He never mentions going to church at all?
What's that?
He never mentions going to church at all, or...
No.
No, I don't know about...
He practices yoga, his wife is a Buddhist, and he doesn't, as far as I know, he's always made clear to me that he doesn't follow any religion.
Do you criticize his wife for being a Buddhist?
Do I criticize her? It's not my place to.
Okay.
I hear snow.
Can you stick around a little longer, Jan? Or what's your
schedule? I am getting hungry. How much longer you want? I do need to get going here.
You know, I think there's a lot to process here. And I really thank you for coming on. Would you be interested in maybe stopping by sometime in the future?
Yeah, we might be able to do that. Why don't we edit off the first 10 minutes or 15 minutes or whatever that's a little bit heated, and then just focus on the philosophical stuff that we discussed?
I think the first hour was pretty heated. we can do that if that's your request.
Well, I mean, we, you know, just find it when it gets to a point that's less heated, you know?
Well, I think that's kind of, I think it's a good document of this dialogue. If we do another show in the future, I think it will just paint a complete picture of what this dialogue is trying to get at. Is, you know, you can start from a very heated and maybe a dialogue that might seem to be coming apart at the seams, but you can, through critical thinking, kind of get to the middle point where some really good work can be done, or understanding can come through.
Right.
If you're cool with that.
I would prefer, you know, for us, you know, we get it and we get where the conversation went, but you're dealing with a lot of people who don't have critical thinking out there and who might not understand that we're trying to, you know, get behind the irrationality of this stuff and expose it so that we're all on the same page moving forward and not, you know...
Are those the people missing the X?
Fighting and killing each other over stupid ancient mystical religious beliefs, you know? That some rabbi or priest wrote in a book so that he could control the tribes.
Well, I'm kind of trusting of our audience, and I think we're open to questions and people not getting it. I'm comfortable with that.
I'm comfortable with that too. But if you're our guest, so if you're making a request, well, we can maybe try and honor that.
No, we can absolutely honor it. I think I like to leave it as it stands. I think it's. We're trying to be the...
Right now, I'd prefer to edit it. I'll listen to it again, and I'll let you know. But as it stands right now, I'd prefer to edit, you know, some of the heated stuff.
Okay, that's fine. You let me know exactly where you want the conversation to start, and that's what we'll do.
All right, sounds good.
Okay, Jan. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
All right, you guys too. Take care. Have a good day.
Take care.
Thanks.